Hello, listener, and welcome to this week's podcast without a recording. What you're about to hear is a recreation of the podcast that we've just not recorded. Much like the Mark Gatiss and Adventure in Space and Time, the real-life persons have been merged into one to save on time and money. This week, the part of Brian Terranova has been dispersed, spread, and split up between James McLean and Christian Cawley. I will now leave you in their capable hands as they re-dramatize the podcast that did not record.
Greetings, Castoverites. This is Christian Cawley, the editor of the Castovers podcast. And with me is James McLean. And let's everyone say goodbye to Brian. Until
Brian.
Next time.
Yes, sir.
Bye.
Oh, bye.
Bye. Yeah. So, yeah, basically, as Brian is beautifully put there, we've just sat here chatting for an hour under the auspices of doing a podcast, which didn't record.
No.
Is, fortunately, this is the only time this has happened in nearly 3 years of podcasts.
Yeah.
So that's the good side. Let's be happy about this. Let's try and find a positive from this.
Yeah, I think you need to find a bit of positive because you seem to have been hit by this quite hard. It's like it's a bit like a death for you. You've become very morose. And subdued. And there's this sort of a hint of anger, a crossness, a podcast with a cross.
A podcast with a cross. Is it with a capital K as well, James?
Always with a capital K. We don't want any of those little small bastard Ks, do we?
No, we don't indeed, yes.
No. Got to keep it classy.
Okay. What's on this week's Castoverus podcast with a K?
What was on Castoverus podcast with a K?
Well, we did ask Brian why he didn't go to the San Diego Comic Con, because of course that is the big topic this week. San Diego.
It is the San Diego
Doctor Who panel, 50th anniversary trailer for an adventure in space and time.
Guys, if we hadn't already talked about this before.
Yeah. I know. And you know, we asked Brian why he didn't go, and I can't for the life of me remember what he said.
He said it over a long duration. So, dear listener, this is actually a bit of a blessing that you've actually got probably a little more of a truncated podcast, because Brian did go on this point. I believe it was because I don't remember. I remember saying that the way they did tickets this year was problematic and made it harder for Americans and the like to actually get tickets as easily.
Right.
I'm not sure, like a deaf politician, whether he actually specifically told us why he didn't go. But it depends on whether you like San Diego Comic Con. As he said, you know, some people love it, some people can't stand it. It's a massive heaving, and I've used this word too much in the previous podcast that you can't hear, bloated machine now than what it used to be. And yeah, so some people don't particularly like that, I imagine. And plus, he's on the East Coast. It's a long way.
Yeah, yeah, he's on the
long
wrong side
way to
of the
walk.
Country. Yeah, it's like us going to the East Coast, really.
Yeah,
it?
Yeah. Why don't we go? Why don't we go to his Pennsylvania Comic Con, the Philadelphia Comic Cons?
Media Innovators.
Well, yeah, exactly.
So that's why Brian wasn't at Comic Con, which is why Castoverus wasn't at Comic Con. But you know, there was other things at Comic Con, and there's lots to talk about there. You know, like Matt Smith was there, wandering around dressed as Bart Simpson, so he could mingle with the fans without them knowing who he was. Which I thought was marvellous. Did you see that?
I saw a picture of him with the Bart Simpson mag. Mug.
Mask?
Mask.
Yeah.
Yes, mask. Sorry, Northern. Mask.
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 Or mask. Yes. So I mean, that's a nice bit of fun. And then there's this big, I mean, there's several smaller panels, but there's this big 50th anniversary panel on Sunday with Matt Smith and Jenna Coleman. That's her new name, Jenna Coleman. Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss, and David Bradley, the latter. Who's, of course, playing William Hartnell in An Adventure in Space and Time. And there's been trailers this weekend as well. Mm-hmm. We'll come to the big trailer in a moment. First of all, there was the Adventure in Space and Time trailer, which I personally was disappointed with because I saw it on YouTube, but not the real trailer, but unfortunately one that someone had done on their smartphone after drinking several bottles of vodka, judging by the shaking.
Disgusting.
Yeah.
Well,
I hope that's why they were shaking.
I imagine they were probably shaking because they knew it was a naughty thing to be doing and they were a little worried about being caught out.
Yeah.
I mean, if Mr. Moffat's beady eye had picked up on that, I could imagine him jumping over the table, grabbing that phone and crushing it with
Claymore.
I was going to make some sort of Scott reference as well. I think yours was better than mine.
Yes.
See, this is a problem, Christian, because I have questions, but the burning questions you've already told me, and I don't know if I've got the thespic urge or ability to be able to ask them with the genuine nature of not knowing what you think when I know what you think.
Well, why don't you tell me what you asked me before?
Well, I think I asked you whether you felt, because you intimated last time less than this time, and you don't have to this time because we're going to be talking about last time. You intimated that you felt that the material on the screen, because it was on this dodgy cam,
yeah,
it didn't look very good.
It didn't look very good.
And
no.
I asked you whether there was a gut instinct in you that was worried that beyond the pirate effect making it look rubbish, whether there was a worry in your gut that there might have, that the actual cake wasn't looking as edible as you were hoping it would be.
Yeah. I think this is something that we can't tell until we see the trailer itself and see the film itself. It looks, as everything we've seen from the photographs, it looks beautifully designed,
yeah,
and superbly cast.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the people that have been cast in the key roles look remarkably like the people that they are portraying.
Mm-hmm.
But until we see it, there was a echo of the, you know, I saw Brian Cox as Sidney Newman, who, and he looked great, and he sounded, you know, Brian Cox is a very good actor. I wish you talk about Brian Cox the actor and not the poncy astronomer.
Thank God, because I didn't know which it was, and I genuinely thought we were talking about the astronomer, and it was going down in my ratings. My K ratings were dropping.
No, not at all. Not that character. A very good actor, Brian Cox, and he usually wavers between English, American, and Scottish accents, but he does manage to pull off a good Canadian here.
Well, there you go.
And if you know Canadians, and if you're Canadian yourself, then you know that there's
you're
a difference.
Canadian
yourself, then you know that there's a difference. But if you don't know any Canadians, or if you can't identify someone who is Canadian, then it's very difficult for you to differentiate a Canadian from an American, isn't it?
Yeah. So, deeply frustrating for both Americans and Canadians.
More so for the Canadians, I think.
I don't know. I think Americans sort of don't particularly like to be considered Canadians as much as Canadians don't like America. I don't know. Maybe American or Canadian might want to tell us rather than a guess for an entire country of how many million people per country.
Well, so yes. We wouldn't want to offend either. Well,
exactly.
But that's another thing from the previous podcast that we didn't record.
Exactly.
We managed to offend women, bald people, and dogs.
Dogs and people who enjoy having C's in their names, or so, just actually C in general,
yeah.
Which I think is interestingly enough, Canadian and American both have an extensive use of C's when they should be considering the case. Though by saying that, Americans would probably find that deeply disturbing, because in the 60s, 50s and 60s, the K was obviously very well heavily connected with Russian terms and Russian names, and that would perhaps be considered quite
racist as well.
And racist, which incidentally is why I'm kind of glad also we've lost the last recording, because my strong beliefs in the case started to make me think people might think that I have some horrid racist slant. Not
or at least a box
listener.
Of Marlboro on your table.
No, it's just simply I have an issue with the letter C. K's are fine. Actually, cake is pretty good. Cake can have C and it can have K, but the overall feeling of it is that the K has more power than the C. I feel the K is dominant in that relationship. So cake, I think, is going to be my highest accolade for something I like rather than classic.
Okay, that's good. But better than Megazap as well.
Yeah, I think so, because Megazap hasn't got any Ks in it at all. I'm quite annoyed about that, really, because I liked Megazap, but no.
No, okay then. Well, in addition to an adventure in space and time, we also discovered that Karen had had her hair cut off.
She had. She's bald.
She's bald now. Yeah, this is Karen Gillan, of course, former Amy Pond actress, and one of the many names appearing in the apparently 85% completed Guardian of the Galaxies movie, in which she plays a villain.
Do you know much about the Guardians of the Galaxy?
I don't!
Is
this a DC, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I've read... I mean, I read the excellent SFX spin-off magazine, Comic Heroes, so I know a bit about it from there, but that's all that I really do know about it.
It seems a bizarre choice.
What to make a movie of?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, DC don't really worldwide have that many big properties like Marvel do, do they?
No,
I think
they
that's
don't.
Why.
That's true. Yeah.
I think that's what's going on there.
They're a bit screwed there. Mm. Yeah. But something interesting, as we were saying about Karen, which we said it, hopefully we'll say it better, although we probably can't because we haven't got Brian with us.
Yeah.
But we were saying that I think one of the nice things about Karen having lost all her hair for this part is that there'll be a more of an emphasis. I think it's good for her because there'll be more of an emphasis to judge her on her acting rather than, as we were talking about, and you perfectly put, the type 40. I don't give a damn she's a bad actress, but she's a hot totty to look at, sort of thing. You can tell I'm a working class person from the way that from my vernacular there. I just morph into the
yourself there, or
yeah,
me?
I just top totty, you know. It's all the lads say these days, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think that's the first
all the Tory lads
top totty on the podcast with a K.
Yes, it's probably more popular in Oxbridge circles. So, yeah, I think that's probably good for her. I think she doesn't look as aesthetic, but then, as I say, I don't think anyone bald particularly looks particularly wonderful, but that might be advantageous for her to make her stand out.
Well, now, is this getting baldest again?
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. I think it's just a state of affairs. The only thing that ever has looked good bald to me is Richard O'Brien.
Fair enough. Do you know, I used to be a avid cyclist.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, well, what have bikes ever done to me?
Oh, right. I see. Yes, it's a racist joke.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yes, I had to work that one out.
Yeah, I'll maybe cut it out, actually.
No, please don't. I'd like you to keep your humiliating joke in there.
Okay, so there was the Adventure Space and Time trailer, and there was Karen's hair, but there was also the other trailer. This is the trailer that we can't see because BBC haven't released it yet. It was screened at the Comic-Con in San Diego in America, this trailer for this British TV show. And we can't see it, can we, James?
No, we can't. Moment.
This is Monday afternoon. We're
Monday
re-recording
afternoon.
This podcast.
Re-recording it from
recording
podcast
it the first
we made.
Time.
Yes, on Monday afternoon. So yes, it's a bugger, really. I still feel a little irritated by it in the grounds that I'm careful how I say this because it's so easy to start sounding like you come from the Daily Mail, isn't it? It's you know, this is a very special year for British television, especially I think for the BBC. To have a show so going on for so long and to carry such popularity and now carrying such international popularity. And I think it's a British commodity, which the British are very proud of. And it somehow feels frustrating to have the first trailer for that special episode to be aired at San Diego Comic-Con. And it's not about it being America. It's about it being, I don't know, as I just feel San Diego is just, as I said earlier, and as I said earlier before that you didn't hear, dear listener, is a very bloated affair where the industry now seems to feel that if you don't show yourself at San Diego Comic Con, you're not going to get anywhere, that you're not worth, you've not got something worth
exist.
Showing.
You're not worthy.
You don't exist. You've got to have a panel at Comic Con. And Doctor Who being a show which doesn't have to rely on that niche audience anyway, and you can understand in days gone by, comics did, you know, Comic Cons were very good for comics. These days, it seems to become a ridiculous place where anything entertainment has to be screened there.
Would
doesn't
you think
matter.
This is, this is something that came to mind when we did our rehearsal.
Yeah.
Do you think this is because of the superhero movies? Do you think this is what's pushed it in this direction?
I think that in part. I think obviously there's no doubt that it's proximity to Los Angeles is a major, major factor, which has meant that it's that industry migrates not too far down south to a convention point. But yeah, I think the internet as well has had a major part, but everything, whether it's video games, whether it's comedy, whether it's television, whether it's comics, God forbid, has to be showcased there. And it feels like no. And we were saying earlier in the podcast that you weren't able to hear, and I'm sorry if it sounds like we're recounting something that we shouldn't need to recount, but it's very hard to do this otherwise. It feels fake, doesn't it? Otherwise,
yes.
It feels like we're being fake to you, dear listener, and I don't like being fake.
No,
and it just feels it should have had maybe had a special one for San Diego, and yet a release at the same day for everywhere else, because it is a trailer, I think, certainly for Britain. I would have had no obligation, no issues if it went internationally on the same day. I'm not saying Britain should have had it first. It just seems a bit weird and a bit industrially sycophantic to have had to have this singular trailer for Doctor Who.
Well, it didn't go down well among certain fans online, did it?
No, and I can understand why, although, as I said, if it becomes down to that fact that it's British and Americans shouldn't see it first, then that's where, as you said, because you see, now I've got to be careful that I don't make it sound like I'm making points that aren't mine, that were actually yours earlier.
Yeah.
So I have to keep name-checking you or Brian to make sure to feel legitimate. So,
well,
yeah.
Yeah, well, my point was that it isn't the fact that America got it first. It's the fact that the San Diego Comic-Con got it first. It's not like it's been beamed to houses across America, this trailer.
Absolutely.
You see, like 10,000 people in an auditorium got to see it.
Well, that's it. And I think that is what's sort of vaguely frustrating about it. And I suppose from a journalistic point of view, it irks a little on that ground. I mean, you know, play people like Cerberus, Arlott, or, you know, all the other Doctor Who websites. You know, they work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, a lot of these websites, trying to keep all the news and supporting the show. And then you know, the fat bloated carcass of San Diego's Comic-Con comes along and it sort of swoops the major exclusive, and you think, well, it was about us. You know, we do the show good. They're here once a year and we're here the rest of the time, and everyone's focused on trying to see what was seen there. And you think, surely something special for San Diego, I think, was worth it. Because as we said, you've got the whole panel there. You've got major Doctor Who players there. It is a big press event. I think that was the point you made earlier, which I think is worth picking up. It is, whether you like it or not, it is a big press event. Press are interested in what's said at San Diego. So there is that fact. And people love Comic-Con as well. They find it fascinating. So, and San Diego is I lived there briefly. It's a gorgeous place, lovely place. Nothing against San Diego. Loved San Diego. Nothing against Comic-Con per se. I just feel the industry sort of got itself caught in this big, it's sort of running around one of those, like a dog running around a post with a lead, and it sort of wrapped itself up really tight where it can't do anything but have to be at Comic-Con. And you think, no, I sure don't like the toys. You know, like they do those special Comic-Con toys, you know, those special brands.
Yeah.
Special brand for the Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And then something for everyone else.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. No, what do you think, listener? You know, there's a, you can, tell you what, listener, if you have an issue, if you have a thought about this, write it down at the bottom of the page here, on the Cerberus page, in the comments section. Then if you delete it, because then you'd be in tandem with what we've had to do, and then rewrite it again. So we sort of have the same sort of mirroring in our feedback as in our audio to you. That would be kind of fun and quite quirky.
Yeah, of course, if you're not able to do that because you're listening through iTunes or on your iPod, your podcast player, or through the Stitcher application.
Stitcher.
Contractual,
better get the right one.
Yeah, contractual obligation there now completed for this week. You wouldn't be able to leave a comment. Stitcher.com, that's right, yeah.
Stitcher.com,
which will enable you to listen to your podcast
Stitcher.com.
through on using the mobile app, or perhaps on an app on your smart dashboard on your new car.
Oh, absolutely. And if you are not able to leave a comment, then I would suggest finding a blank wall and saying the comment to the blank wall and then saying it a second time to the blank wall. Because quite likely I would get round to reading your comments either way. So you might as well just say it to a blank wall, because it's all you're going to get back from me.
Might as well say it back to the bloody MP3 player. There.
The MP3 player, yeah. Or you could send a comment to Stitcher.com. Let them know what you feel. No, please don't.
No, don't do that. Comment upon the page, delete it, rewrite it. You know, it's safer that way anyway.
It is safer, isn't it?
So anyway, yeah, so this trailer, we don't know an awful lot about it.
Daleks.
We haven't seen it.
We don't know about that, do we? Sorry, go on.
But we know that there are Daleks in it. And that Russell T Davies / Time War Daleks.
Time War Daleks.
And Time War apparently features heavily in the trailer. So presumably in the episode.
Maybe.
Which is particularly interesting. I mean, just for a change. it's as if the podcast, what am I talking? It's as if the 50th anniversary episode has suddenly become more interested. It's got some more life to it now. It's not just about sort of like fathoming out which version of the 10th Doctor.
Well, it sounds like we were right on that, though, weren't we? That it wasn't. I mean, a lot of people were saying, oh, no, it's an alternative Doctor, but it is actually a Doctor, and the Time War being the relevant place for him. So that's kind of interesting in itself.
Indeed. So now we've got Daleks blowing up with flames in front of them on some of the... because there's actually three images being released.
Yes, I was
and I, I noticed that the flames have been very well positioned. I think there's some sort of 3D baiting going on there.
And we've got Zygons as well, obviously.
Yes.
That's been in the news, and obviously Tennant as well.
Yeah.
And co. And I recall a shot showing the Tennant version of the police box as well. That's...
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure I saw a shot on the Zygon shoot with...
Right.
I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I saw the more greyed, worn version, which I think's a nice thing to look for. And we've obviously got other small things mentioned, Cole Hill mentioned. So there's lots of little past references, which I think's pretty cool. There was the Barrowman question as well.
Indeed.
Speaking of bald.
Yes.
Or not.
No, because obviously he's not bald.
No, but I thought for a long time
he was. And has never been bald.
I know.
And probably would never be bald.
I know. I've spent years watching the screen, even pausing to see where that weave connected. I was absolutely certain. His hair was just so odd. You go and watch, I think, about season two of Torchwood. Certainly get to Children of Earth. And it is a bizarre thing. It's not that it's spiky. It just looks like no other hair does. And when the hair looks like no other hair does, it normally means it's not like any other hair because it's a weave or something. And so I'm sure, but lo and behold, he was on a morning programme and he actually tugged at it and explained he had to have it dyed regularly, contractually, because he wasn't allowed to go grey.
Was he using Stitcher?
Stitcher.com to stitch his weave in. Yeah, maybe, but no, and he's not. And not that I have any. I just find things like that a bit fascinating. And so no, he's not one of the bald. But we did wonder who next would be going bald for the for various reasons. They seem to just go for any reason, don't they? Matt Smith.
Well, it's got to be Jenner, hasn't it?
I suppose so. What about Arthur?
Arthur. Well, he's. I mean, he's too busy being a serious actor, isn't he? Really.
Well, you know, you can have bald serious actors.
Yes, indeed, you can.
We've
offended
O'Brien
bald people
or,
again,
yes,
now, haven't we? By yes. suggesting bald
or Duncan,
characters aren't
Duncan
serious.
Duncan the swimmer guy.
People
out there.
Let's just forget I said anything.
Why has Richard O'Brien ever been in Doctor Who? You'd think he'd have been perfect for Doctor Who.
Yeah, well, I think perhaps he was someone they were interested in the 80s.
Yeah, I would imagine. I could imagine that.
Yes, I think I recall reading that somewhere back in the day.
Back in the day,
back in the day, yes. Back in those heady days of
of the north of the coal mines and
Well, no, the
Lancashire Hot Pot
era.
That time.
That thing.
So
northern on me.
Yeah, sorry.
It's as if you've never been to the north, even lived there or been born there.
Someone told me that your currency is coal.
Sea coal.
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? So one of my friends used that on me when I was living in the north. Anyway, so what's next on your list of stuff that we've already talked about?
Well, you know, it's just interesting because we're actually getting to the point where we haven't actually talked about it.
Oh my God.
What happens, dear listeners, when there's only two of us in the podcast, it sometimes seems as if we ramble on forever and ever and ever, but we're actually only halfway through this half an hour through this podcast. Whereas the previous podcast, which we didn't record, was certainly over an hour.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? I'm trying to think. I think...
Does Brian talk a load of rubbish?
Brian does love to expand on things. I mean, there was an interesting thing, which maybe we should cover because it was quite a fun topic. Brian was having a bit of a day on him about a bit of a Moffat day, which is nice because I like to take the reins. Have the reins taken off me sometimes, and I have someone else get into the stirrups and take that horse. And he was getting a little fed up of how Moffat seemed to be retro writing almost.
Yes,
elements of Doctor Who,
imposing himself across all of Doctor Who lore.
And I think you can say there is a certain argument for that. And to be fair, I mean, I like to be devil's advocate because I like to think of myself being fairly objective. You could say the same for people like John Nathan Turner, who certainly rewrote, or him and, okay, a few before him, you know, the Time Lords were heavily rewritten and the Regenerations were heavily, lore became far more rigid, maybe, in his era. So it's not just Moffat who's done this, although I'd imagine Moffat's the one who's done it because there is that perhaps an unhealthy mix of being a writer and a Doctor Who fan, which means you have an urge to make Doctor Who into something that it is very much your own perspective of Doctor Who. While with John Nathan Turner, I think John Nathan Turner was more about doing his job, trying to do well in his job. In very loud shirts. Loud shirts to beckon and woo like sirens upon the rocks, the variety of C-list celebrityisms of the day towards his show, and cast them as he could. But yes, Moffat has done a lot of stuff to change it. And one thing that we were talking about with Brian was, is what he objected to was that Moffat's started to have this assertion that not only do you have the fact that the TARDIS lured the Doctor in to enjoy journeys with the Doctor rather than it being the Doctor's choice per se, you also have Clara now, who is there, who beckons the Doctor in the right direction as well. So, you know, the TARDIS was almost going to lose out on the opportunity of being for that girl there, beckoning the guy over and sort of, you know, the used car lot sort of analogy, and whether that took away from the Doctor. And it was an interesting point because Brian was saying he saw the Doctor's past in a quite a pleasant, simplistic point of view, didn't he?
Yeah.
That it was very much about the Doctor being someone who just wanted to enjoy life and see the
universe. Without the constraints of the Time Lord Society.
Where he feels that the Moffat and to be fair as well, go back to the 80s to Andrew Cartmell and John Nathan Turner, who are looking at sort of making the Doctor darker as well and more mysterious to his past, could have suggested there was a more a bigger epical mysterious element to him, which had him on the run. And trying to find where people stood on that, we probably spent a bit too long on that, but I think it's quite interesting because what I was finding interesting in that conversation was I started to see William Hartnell as a very different Doctor to Patrick Troughton, because in a sense I can see where Brian would be coming from if the first Doctor was Patrick Troughton.
Uh-huh.
But when you take the Doctor as he is, as William Hartnell, and if we ignore the Hand of Omega canon affair that does infer that there was something darker or some elements of his past we don't know about, he did seem, as we put it, like a refugee almost. A refugee, as if there was some background to him that he was running from. It wasn't just simply to go and see the world. But like many people on the run, don't tend to sort of tell people that they were, say, a top agent for the Celestial Intelligence Agency, who was caught in the mixture of a terrible Hand of Omega affair, and hopefully not a literal Hand of Omega affair. And you know where I'm going with this. That would be
so
interesting. Daily Mail would have had a field day of that, wouldn't it? Very embarrassed looking William Hartnell shuffling into a police box with lights, flashlights around him. Hand of Omega speaks out. Yes. It was a tawdry affair. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Bless him.
Yes. It's a good point that Brian makes.
I can't even use the "he entered me frequently" joke because I made that in the previous podcast. Yeah.
It's a good point. And it does. I mean, is Moffat more blamed or more kind of identified with being responsible for this because he's the man in charge now? Did Andrew Cartmell do there was much to this kind of rewriting of the canon?
Well, I was thinking, I wonder, and this is a bit, I mean, I think Andrew's a lovely guy and I'm a massive fan of what he did. I always wondered if you take Death Comes to Time, which was meant to sort of carry some of the possible arcs of the season that was never made, the McCoy season that was never made, where maybe he took Ace to Gallifrey.
Yeah.
And it somehow initiated there, whether the McCoy era could have gone down a route which would have had as much awkwardness as people have with Moffat, that that where the Carmel era ended was an era where the mystery was kept.
Yes.
And it didn't push too far in any direction. It just added a few questions. If maybe that next season might have given us too much in the sense that maybe there is an argument, not just with Moffat taking Clara to go back to hint to which TARDIS the Doctor should go into, which is a coy, very fannish sort of idea, which I don't think it does actually benefit the show, really. It's a nice moment to see William Hartnell there and see Mark Composites done, but I don't think it benefits his story. I think Brian's right there.
Is it fan wank?
I think it's fan wank when it's something which is fun because you're enjoying it for the wrong reason. You're enjoying it because you're seeing William Hartnell connected to a moment with your contemporary companions. And that's exciting because your brain starts firing. It starts thinking, wow, these two situations are connected. That show I watched when I was a kid is still relevant to this show I'm watching now. Mm. This is still the same continuity. That's where it starts to get exciting. But when you actually think, having Clara saying that to the character, does that add anything? Does it give any dramatic impetus to that moment? Does it benefit our understanding of the Doctor? Does it take away something from what we know of the Doctor? And I tend to think, if you look at it honestly, it doesn't give you many positives. It does, as Brian says, it actually neuters to a degree the Doctor a bit. It takes away some of the free will, which is what can happen. And I agree. I don't think that's the case with the TARDIS, though, with the Doctor's wife, because I don't get the impression that the TARDIS lured him in. The Doctor was looking for a TARDIS. He was going to take one.
Yeah.
It was in a way, you could almost argue, a mutually beneficial arrangement the TARDIS wanted to be taken. But you might have found the TARDIS next door, the one that he was staring quite lovingly at, probably in the finale episode, possibly with the same lust and lurid hopes, or wanton hopes that he had once given to the Hand of Omega. Over some sort of candlelit dinner. Maybe that TARDIS had the same motivations as the Type 40 that we know. We don't know.
We don't know.
We don't know. And we probably won't know until Moffat's next season of Doctor Who.
Indeed. Right.
The Doctor's other wife.
The Doctor's other wife. The Doctor's love child.
Yeah.
Now, dear listener, we you probably know, if you're one of our many regulars, many of our hundreds and occasionally over 1,000 regular listeners, that we like to give you something a bit more tangible than just our opinions. We like to give you something to go out and do, or maybe stay at home and do, or just load up and do. Our recommendation section. Now, I've got a couple of things here that I want to talk about. James, have you got anything to recommend this week?
I'm going to recommend that if you haven't got a K in your name, to insert a K in your name. If you would like to try and leave a message for us where you've inserted your K in the name in the least probable place and feel that it's worth us having a look, I'd be very interested to see where the K in your name has been placed. If you have a K in your name, and I know that there are listeners, I know one listener with a K in the name listens to this, you are our top listeners. You are first class. The class, of course, has a K, and the first has a silent K. We respect you more. It's totally arbitrary, and it's totally elitist, but I think they are our top listeners. Do I have anything to recommend beyond that? I finished Invasion of the Dinosaurs, and I finished Android Invasion.
Oh, right.
Is that just
watching it or the audiobook?
Watching it.
Android Invasion, ginger beer.
I thought you were going to ask in a sort of sense that, you know, had I actually finished an Android Invasion? Yes, yes. A small Android Invasion I've just completed in Malta. Little do they know yet that in a few hours, upon my special code word of Stitcher.com, the androids will come alive and take over the Maltese capital. No, it's, Android Invasion. I enjoyed it. I've seen it before, long, 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 long time ago.
Yeah.
And I was a little annoyed that I remembered too early the twist of where it's actually set, which is a shame. Because if you don't know that, and I think it had been a pleasure to watch the first time round, and then to discover that this is the twist of the setting.
Okay.
You're going to assume people know it. Yes, okay, that it's not actually on Earth. It's set on the Kral homeworld. I hope that hasn't been a double spoiler. Maybe some of you were hoping, as soon as I said it wasn't set on Earth, it was set on Skyrim or Mars. But no, it's actually Kral homeworld. I don't think it's given a name unless it is actually Kral. It's a good story, and I think they're right in every point of it. I think the funniest thing is how upset the production is over the reveal that the human protagonist's eye patch, the guy who is meant to have been put together by the Kraals after an accident, but they couldn't find his eye in the wreckage, and so they gave him an eye patch. And then he finds out at the end, the doctor reveals to him that he never was in a wreckage, and just go and check in the mirror that you have an eye under your eye patch, and which he does, and he's shocked. And they say, yeah, this is terrible, because people were laughing and saying, well, you know, surely he would know. You'd at one point had to wash that eye and take the eye patch off, and lo and behold, there would have been an eye there. But I think you've got to argue in defense, and I think this is where shows can get too critical of themselves, the beauty of fiction, is that he was brainwashed. That was made clear. Yeah. So he probably did wash his eye, but until he was told that he had an eye, he didn't see he had an eye.
Yes.
And there's small things like that, and they get very upset at the end that there was a missing scene which would have explained why the Doctor android is still active when the other androids are deactivated. Well, it's the Doctor. He activates it and switches it on, but they got very upset over that. And it's interesting how sometimes the power of hindsight can make you overanalyze and get over concerned over plot points that you didn't think were going to be a problem because it'd only be seen for once, and it's then it would be aired once and then that would be it. But I don't think there's any problems with that.
No.
I do think there's problems when you get shows like Sherlock, where in their final episode they have them on the run from the police, and then 4 minutes or so after that they forget about it for the rest of the episode. That to me is chronic, because you know people are going to be rewatching and asking what happened there. But you can forgive it in the Android Invasion. Very good story. Terry Nation. Nice to see Terry not doing Daleks in Doctor Who. I recommend it.
Yep.
And if you buy it, you get the Dinosaur Invasion as well with it on the unit files.
Brilliant.
So, sorry, what were you going to recommend?
Well, I've got two things to recommend.
Well, you can't recommend People with a K, because I've already done that.
Well, I won't be doing that. The first thing I will be recommending is a limited edition 50th anniversary collectible magazine, Achieve It,
right,
which has been made by the wonderful students of Isgall Penybryn Special School. You may have seen this on Castorbis. It has the original cover of the Dalek Project, the original cover art from the Dalek Project, which was initially going to be released as a 10th Doctor graphic novel. From BBC Books a few years ago, and due to similarities with something else that was in production, it was pushed back and rewritten slightly and had the 11th Doctor. And it also features interviews with Anthony Head, William Russell, Katie Manning, Russell T Davies, Dan Starkey, Sophie Aldred, Brian Blessed, and Louise Jameson, Angie Mahindra from Sarah Jane Adventures, and also the cover artist himself, Mike Collins. This is a beautiful little fanzine. The production quality, well, let's just go back. Isgall Penybryn Special School, Sixth Form Enterprise Group, produced this. These are students with learning and physical difficulties. And it's a marvellous piece of work. Really is superbly produced. They've had assistance from Character. They've had a sponsorship from Character. But it's a really good piece of work. It is a limited edition. You'll find the address on Castorbis, and we'll link to it in the podcast. They do, I believe, still have copies left. And I would recommend it. It's a lovely... you know, there's nothing deep or heavy in it. There's no in-depth commentaries or interviews that go on for pages and pages and pages. It's just a really, really nice collection of interviews and small features.
Would you recommend it, Cake?
Cake, definitely.
It's Cake. There we go.
So that's the first thing. The other thing is if you like your fanzines to be more on the subversive side, then the latest issue of Fanwanak is out. Only £50. It says on the cover, but it's been styled this time in the manner of a TV guide magazine. So we've got various... and it's celebrating the Doctor Who 50th anniversary with various amusing, depending on your sense of humour, features. There's a chill out with the moth special feature on the back. There's endless listings inside and a few comic strips. And it's worth taking a look at. There is a lot of it to get through. And I wouldn't perhaps recommend it unless you've previously read an issue of Fanwenak, which I have. So
why is that? Why would you not?
It's not a straightforward. It's not like you're not going to. It's not Custerbus magazine. It's not Warp. It's a very particular sense of humor, a very particular attitude towards fandom. So irony, piss taking, that kind of thing going on there. But fun nonetheless, if that is your bag.
And how much is it?
£50. That's not the actual price. I don't have the actual price to hand at the moment, but it will be linked to our feature on our news item on the magazine in the Custerbus show notes.
Not the best gag, really, is it, when you're trying to sell a magazine?
Well, sticking £50 on the cover.
Yeah.
I know.
Especially these days, where, you know.
I think it's a 50th anniversary gag.
I see.
So there you go. And I'm currently working on sorting out the print version of Custerbus magazine issue 1 while we're on the topic of fanzines.
Oh yes.
Yes. Am I keeping you up?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's been a long afternoon of podcasting.
A long afternoon of podcasting. Yeah, I'm getting a bit bored of my own voice. Yes. You did Custerbus magazine issue 1. Yeah. Well, that feels so much in the past. I spent the last week sort of ploughing through the stuff for issue 2.
Yes, and it looks fantastic. I'm really, really excited about this.
It's a more sort of garish, energetic layout this time. A little more constant, I think. And
yes,
more fun.
I don't think garish is very bad.
Not garish. There's a couple of garish pages. I made sure there's a bit of greeny yellows.
I think that was intentional, though. That's a
it's
a thematic choice because basically we're talking about Doctor Who games.
Yes.
More or less throughout issue 2. Video games and we'll be doing board games as well.
Yes. So it's got it's games, really.
It is. And it's a massive topic as well. So basically, you can thank Gareth Kavanagh for the idea of focusing on particular areas of Doctor Who fandom.
Which is good. Yeah, because
it is good.
It's static stuff, so if we're a little delayed, we don't have to worry about getting it out.
Yes.
At the moment, I sort of made a headway through to about 20 odd pages, so it's moving along quite nicely.
So we'll be making more progress with that over the next few weeks, and we will have it out this year.
Oh, definitely. There's no doubt it's going to be out this year.
So that is good. And that brings us to the end of this week's Custerbus podcast with a K. Whether you are listening on your iPod, your through the website, using the Stitcher.com app, and perhaps in future using Audio Boo, which will be available on. Thank you, James, for taking the time to record the podcast, as opposed to just speak it just to the ether.
Thank you, Christian, for taking the time as well to equally speaketh the podcast for a second time. Sorry to Brian as well, because he did have lots of interesting things
to say. He did, yeah. Brian was pretty much on form today.
He was.
He was the star of the original podcast.
The original, you might say.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, the pilot podcast.
Yes. So we'll wind up there, and we'll speak to you again next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.